Well, build my gallows and build them high. Makes a long time climbing before I die. I want the chance that's built in his eye. Well, he gave me balls, but I can see between to a dusty yard and a long gone green. They call that freedom, if you know what I mean. And I drown my sorrows, but the whiskey's gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Long Bangers. This is episode 81. I'm Matty. I'm your host tonight. I'm joined by John. John, how are you this fine evening?
I am very good, but I'm looking at the screen and I can't see you. All I've got is a picture of you.
Is this why you're very good?
Aye. Sorry, because I didn't have to look at you.
Oh, man. I hope it's recording, because the plan was to stick this on YouTube later, so if it's no... maybe a bonus for everybody else as well. Talking about that, John, we did it as a wee experiment, didn't we? We put one video up that was our coupons filming the podcast, and it got 100 and odd views on it, which is almost our best ever, apart for the wanky one. And the one for Short Bangers last week got 10 views or 15 views or something with no video. So I think we'll probably just put the video on going forward. And the worrying thing about that is people are looking, they'll be able to see how bad my hair's getting. I mentioned this last week on the podcast, and I think probably the podcast before. And I'm moving away from Father Ted and heading towards Derek McInnes, which is a fucking worry as well.
Are you heading towards Derek McInnes, or is he heading towards you?
Oh, that's a good question. He's older than me, I think. He must be older than me. I don't know. Quickly to check this, because I will be distraught if Derek McInnes is younger than me.
If you get a chance, have a look on YouTube for something called, I think it's the Battle of Bramall Lane. It's a game between West Brom and Sheffield United that I'm sure had to be abandoned. Derek McInnes, if I remember rightly, scored a bit of a screamer in that game. But it's worth it just for the tatty field pitches, like pre-money in the English Premiership, but you know how the pitches now are pretty much all pristine. Must be pre-heat lamp days, pre-air and moisture getting sucked through the pitches.
Like hybrid pitches and that. Like Easter Road, effectively.
Aye, that's a good... funnily enough, I've seen a lot of people talking about the pitch. That was a nice segue.
It was in the half. Derek McInnes is 49, so he is older than me by a distance. 1971 he was born. And it's good because I slag him for looking like he's having a midlife crisis. I'm not having a midlife crisis. I'm just in the middle of fucking lockdown and the barbers are open. So I'll be taking the clippers to it soon. My excuse for the shan beard, though, that's all I'm doing. That's just laziness.
I say that to people as well. Like, I'm not trying to grow a beard. I've just not shaved for 6 months.
Aye. What can you do, eh? What's the point? Can't even wait to it.
Well, you were saying to me before we started recording that you've been wearing a beanie when you go out to try and hide that monstrosity on your head. Aye. I was going to say, what are you wearing on your face? But we're all wearing face masks these days.
Well, this is the best thing about it, because when you've got a woolly hat on and then your face mask, you can pretty much pretend to be a ninja.
I said this months and months ago, like before I got just fucking annoyed at the world, but particularly the Hibs sort of emerald green face mask, like the first one that they brought out, I felt like I was like Scorpion out of Mortal Kombat cutting about it. I thought it was brilliant.
Wait, you rip somebody's spine out.
Aye.
Do you mind though, the first thing about Mortal Kombat when it first came out? Are you old enough to remember that?
I had it on Mega Drive, and I remember, I don't know how it got passed around. I'm sure I was at primary school when I had the Mega Drive and Mortal Kombat was out, and the folk were passing around the blood cheat, so you could actually like impale, I think it was one of the characters could impale whoever it was that he was fighting against on the roof. It was like spikes on the roof, or it was spikes down below or something, and you can like rip people's heads out and still have the spine attached. Great days.
I should have got discussed in like in Senate in America. There was like a committee or whatever brought the makers of it up before them to protest about how violent and gory it was, and then you look at it now and it's pretty cold, you know what I mean? Anyway, right, we digress. Hibs 2 Kilmarnock now, John. What were your thoughts on the game?
I thought it was a tricky game in tricky conditions and against a tricky opponent. But on three occasions now, Hibs have come out the victor against Kilmarnock. We've got 9 points out of nine against them this season, which I think in recent years, Hibs have sort of exchanged blows, if you like, with Kilmarnock. It's, you know, and there's often been quite high scoring games as well. So to as much as they, you know, Kilmarnock maybe haven't hit the heights that they did, you know, just to, was it maybe 2 or 3 years ago under Steve Clarke, and actually even the season beyond, for Hibs to take 9 points out of nine out of them, I think is an achievement to be recognised.
The 5-3, when you talk about the high scoring games, mind the 5, it was 5-3, wasn't it? Just the week before we played Rangers and drew 5-5.
Aye.
And the 5-3 would have been a classic game as well. Everybody would have talked about 8 goals in the game. It was fucking brilliant. If it hadn't been for the 5-5 the next game week. So that's like how mental Hibs were at that time. You'd go 2 home games and we scored 10 goals and concede 8.
I was going to say, like, I wonder if there's any statisticians out there that can show us another time that Hibs have scored 10 goals in 2 games.
Well, there might be when two consecutive home games for me, because we know put 9 past somebody, like who's like Arbroath or somebody like that, Montrose maybe, in the cup under Bobby Williamson. I'm sure Dobby scored all the goals in that game, if memory serves me right. I can't remember who was it, Arbroath or Montrose or somebody like that, I think. Somebody will be able to tell
Montrose
us, I'm
sure. Right. That sounds a bit right.
So we would only needed 1 goal in the next again game today to get to 10.
Under Bobby Williams,
7 past Livy.
There's every possibility that we didn't do it.
That's a fair point, to be honest. Aye. Do you know, I think Kelly have gone backwards, and I spotted the reason why. And Steve Clarke obviously took a lot of credit when he was there before he took the Scotland job. But Alex Dyer, who was there with Clarke, has taken over. But have you seen what happened to his hood? It was Jack. He couldn't control his hood. There's no way a man that can't control his jacket hood like that can get results in the football pitch. I'm not having it. Is when you knew Arsene Wenger was starting to go wrong at Arsenal was when he couldn't zip up coats. What's happening at Killie?
Was there like, was there footage of it during the highlights of him being unable to control his hood?
You just,
I think we should tweet that if there is.
It was just still, it wasn't flapping about or anything, but it was high up, but not on.
All right.
The best way to describe it, you know when you put a coat with a hood on and the hood kind of lies flat behind you, right, resting on your shoulders.
Aye.
Well, this was up, like hitting the back of his head.
That's a bit strange. Like, I don't know about you, but I sometimes put my hood up, and because I've got a large head and equally large ears, I usually just leave my ears sticking out like Dumbo, just sort of flapping about.
Special John.
Aye. I never go out like that, to be fair. It's just for banter in the house.
You ever put your arms in the wrong sleeves?
No.
So, before you go through to the misses after the podcast finished, stick your arms in the wrong sleeves at the front, you know, run them crossed across the front of your body, and then go through and try and do things with your hands the wrong way. That's quite amusing.
Right. Wow. I'll report back next week. Let you know how I got on.
What the fuck are we on about? Right. Hibs Killie, back to that. So, tough game, difficult conditions. We had Jackson Irvine started.
Name well
right
done
first time.
Getting his name right.
Fucking dancer. How do you think he did?
Well, I've got opposing views. Between me... I was going to say, no. That sounds a bit daft. Eh? That's like me and my inner monologue having opposing views. No, me and my adopted dad. He thought that Jackson Irvine had a good game. I think that there was a few... I think Joe Newell, in his pundit role at the weekend, he said that he'd had a couple of nice touches. I didn't think that he'd done anything wrong. I thought that his inclusion maybe upset Hibs' flow a little bit, but that's maybe me being just hypercritical. But I think by Jackson Irvine's own admission, he said that it wasn't the most accomplished performance.
Refined.
Refined. Was that the right word? Refined, sorry. He wasn't dreadful. There was a really good opportunity for him. I think there was a ball swung in and he's challenged for the ball. Like, I know that sounds a bit daft. I don't know if Brian was here, he'd be ripping me for saying that's a Johnism, but there's a ball out of the box and it reminded me of a goal that he scored because he had this highlight reel on Instagram. It was like, because he's quite a tall bloke, isn't he? He must be foot plus. But he's tried to use his height to his advantage. He's tried to, he's properly attacked this ball into the box, and he's been unlucky not to get on the end of it. He done all right. I think I was maybe surprised to see him in the starting lineup because I said the week before that it feels odd to me that he's got, 10 months without senior football, albeit he's been training, and he's just pitched straight into the starting lineup. It didn't sit right with me.
Aye. It says a lot for him in the levels of fitness that he's maintained, that he was able to last 70 minutes. I thought when he said about not being refined, I know exactly, I think, the challenge you're talking about. There was a few moments in the match where he looked to me a bit like, do you remember when Stuart Pearce was in charge of Man City? And I think it was the last game of the season, they were chasing Europe and they needed the win. And for some reason, they put David James, the goalkeeper, up front.
No. Is that on YouTube? We'll need to look for that on YouTube.
Yeah, it'll be on YouTube, right? But you imagine a goalkeeper playing up front. You know when a goalie comes up for a corner and if they make contact, they tend to foul quite a lot. They'll just clatter into somebody because they're used to just wiping folk out and being able to do that with immunity. Well, it was like that. He kind of slid into tackles like 20 minutes late and kind of laughing about it as the players.
Well, hang on. This was just a case of like a late corner, for example, and David James was in goals and launched him up front. He put him on as a substitute. He put David James on as a striker.
Aye. he had actual strikers on the bench. He wasn't like, oh, fuck, we've no play. It was like he'd done a Celtic and had to like keep all his players quarantined. He had strikers on the bench. Imagine you're a striker sitting on the bench thinking, fuck, this is a really important game. We're going to get Europe. Can I get on, boss? We're chasing a goal. Put me on. David, you got up front. You'd be livid.
Oh, great. I think if I was a striker sitting on the bench, I'd be looking at David James going on thinking, maybe I've got a shot and goals coming up.
Aye, maybe. It was one of the most mental. I think everybody thought it was a big laugh, but I was like, I would go fucking mental. See if that was, if Jack Ross did that in our last game and we were due, we had a chance in Europe. And I thought, right, Matt Macy, 6'7", he'll cause some carnage up front. We'll just play him instead of Doidge. How raging would you be? Do you know what I mean? You're like, that's not the time or place to be doing things like that. Anyway.
Well, I think the Down the Slope podcast had tweeted something out earlier, and they were saying, what would make you say,
oh, for fuck's sake, Hibs.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Hibs, fuck off. Like, that is, like, Hibs putting Matt Macy up front for 20 minutes is exactly what I would how I would respond to that.
Aye. Anyway, watch on YouTube and then you'll know what I'm talking about. Just that bit where you see a player who, I mean, different for David James, who was never a striker anyway, but just who's a wee bit off the pace, you know, that, if you're being kind. It's kind of making a good effort, but just being maybe a yard or two short of sharpness. But I thought he did some good things in the game as well. And when he gets up to speed, I think he's going to be a real handful for teams because he's sort of that all-action player. He talked about being box-to-box. And I think he made an attempt at doing it.
Well, going from one box to the other.
Yeah, just the once. Too knackered after that. We had the first goal. So the first half, not a lot really happened in it. We went in 0-0. I thought the first half was quite a sort of... how did I summarise it at the time? I think I said that neither team played particularly badly and neither played particularly well, but they just sort of cancelled each other out.
I tend to agree with that. I thought that Hibs perhaps had the majority possession or the better of the play or whatever, but I thought of the better football that was played in the first half, it definitely came for Hibs. There was a couple of really nice movements from out wide where they tried to set up an attack from and they just didn't quite pan out. But I like it. Football's like that sometimes. Sometimes like football is just a bit, like you say, I think I'd mentioned it before, but on the High Beats Bouncers, a boy who writes the sort of post-match reports, he writes something called Just Back, and he'd said that Hibs had won the war of attrition.
Yeah.
And that was pretty accurate, I thought.
Aye, I just thought the cancel, the Kilmarnock knew how to stifle us and we knew how to limit Kilmarnock. I think that was one of those halves. In the second half, I thought we started with a bit more oomph about us, a bit more drive, and we were a bit more direct. I think Jack Ross mentioned playing the conditions a bit better second half, which I think we did.
How do you think Hibs done that? Because I don't remember specifically anything that looked different from the first half to the second. I just thought second half Hibs continued to, you know, continued to have the better attacking moves, which resulted in the goals. But how do you think they adapted to the conditions?
I think we played longer passes. We were a bit more direct, and we played into space a bit more rather than try to work the ball with kind of intricate passing moves, which I think we tried and failed with in the first half because it just wasn't, you know, the pitch wasn't reliable enough for the passes to come off. I think we looked for channels a bit more and into space. So if you look at when we scored, the goal comes, the ball gets played out to Murphy, who's on his own. He takes it forward and holds it up until Doidge makes the overlap and run. And actually, Murphy, I can't remember if it was before or after, we'd had a really good opportunity that he got the ball and cut back and held it up, and we lost the opportunity. You know, Kelly got men back, and we ended up, I think, the ball coming back into our half. We still kept possession, but the break was finished by that point, and Kelly had a chance to regroup. This time when he held it up, he just, you could see he was waiting for support. It wasn't just a, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this.
Yeah.
And then Doig makes overlap and puts a cross in, and Power had a great own goal. I love own goals like that as well, where it's like, it's calamitous.
He's caught, it's one of those shitty own goals, isn't it? Where he's caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, he does nothing with it, and it's in that danger area where there's a, maybe he's unsighted, maybe he's not got a shout. There's an attacker coming in behind him, looking to just kind of prod it home. Or he tries to do something with it. And do you know what? It's funny because so often in that situation, the ball does end up in the back of the net, but you rarely see players just kind of leave it. Yeah. They kind of have to attack it as a defender in their own right.
Aye. It's a great area to put the ball. But the thing is,
fantastic.
If the keeper's getting it, that's the mental thing about it. If keeper gives him a decent shout, he's getting it. I think it's, he almost saves it as well after Power deflects it, which makes it funnier because it sort of squirms underneath them. They can see it. You imagine it happening in slow motion for them as that ball was trundling into the back of the net. But that, go back to the point I was making about what we did differently, it was that sort of direct play, albeit Murphy then slowed it up when it mattered, that led to the goal.
Aye. It's funny, I was just thinking before about what you were saying about the intricate passing, because obviously Joe Newell was missing. He was injured and he was filling in as pundit. And I thought that Hallberg has been underappreciated in fulfilling that role. I thought he had a tremendous game playing that same sort of kind of give and go midfielder, like receiving the ball and trying to move it that little bit further up the pitch and then always making himself available for the pass. And I think Jack Ross had said before, It was a few weeks, maybe even months ago now, that Hallberg has played. He's like a utility player, and he's played in so many different positions all over the pitch, and he always gets maximum effort out of him. Hallberg at one point had taken a bit of a sore one. I don't think that necessarily slowed him up, and I think possibly that fits in with what you were saying about Hibs maybe being a little bit more direct. Like, maybe they just missed out that little sort of intricate 1-2 or that, you know, pass out of defence midfield and then try to move it on again and just bypass them. But I thought he'd done excellently in that role.
It was an interesting moment he got hurt as well, because he looked like he'd proper done himself in.
Aye.
Do you know, like, it's one of these ones where there's not really been a bad challenge on him. He's just twisted funny or whatever. But I think he was injured for about a minute, minute and a half, and then... He looked quite distraught about it as well. Do you know when the player looks like they're in distress and Kenny's waving his arm? And
there's that, like you say, that movement where he sort of like pointed at himself or he pointed at the bench and it was like, oh no, I'm done, I'm finished.
They're just about to do this signal. The universal substitute me signal.
Do you remember when Stevenson had a weird sort of leggy knee jarring thing against the Greek side, Tripolis? And it looked like I felt as distraught as Hallberg looked at the weekend, thinking that Stevenson was injured.
Aye.
But then he just got up and soldiered on. And Hallberg was kind of similar. Like, I wonder if he's maybe just felt things sort of like jar or like batter against each other within the joint or whatever. And he's got a wee bit of fright. Like, you've maybe played like football yourself and you've gone over in your ankle at some point, like when you were doing the keepy uppies. Like yeah. There's times when you go over in your ankle and you think, right, that's it, I've broke my ankle. Like you might as well just amputate it now. I'm fucked.
Well, we likened it to stubbing your toe. I imagine the worst pain ever for about 30 seconds and then you forget about it. So I wonder if, I always think like, the players feel daft after that. Again, everybody's looked at them thinking, oh, fucking hell, Pure Melker's done himself in here. Then everybody's worried for him. And then 2 minutes later, he's fucking gnashing about the park like nothing's happened.
It's a really difficult thing as a spectator to try and judge how seriously injured someone is, because you'll have seen someone go down under a hard but fair challenge and they'll be rolling about and they'll be screaming and whatever. And then, you know, 30 seconds later, they're up and running after the ball. It's usually, I think the really serious injuries are the ones where, you know, people, you know, the other players are coming looking at it and they're covering their eyes and they're away and they're chundering at the side of the pitch.
Sick.
Aye.
That's why I think it's perfectly acceptable just to slaughter players when they're lying on the ground.
Just
opponents, not your own team. But
get what I miss about the football is the shout for someone that shout, you know, the boy that shouts, just fucking bury him.
Aye. Die, yeah, God. That's always worrying. You're like, whoa, that's a bit much, mate. So it was good that he wasn't injured anyway. And the second goal comes from Gogic. Talk us through that goal, John.
What a hit. I thought in the sort of millisecond after it's left his boot, I thought it'd gone wide or over. Like, there just seemed to no reaction. It was obviously just the time that it took for the ball to bulge in the top right hand corner of the net for people to react. And obviously John Yule was saying afterwards that, you know, he'd like to say that he hit them like that in training, but I think Gogic was saying afterwards that's the first one that he scored with his feet. But I think we'd be hard pressed to say that he wasn't due a goal, like for the header that he had, like the sort of glancing diving header that the Kelly keeper pulled off a really good save from. And I think the goal, as much as it, like, I don't think anyone would say, like, he definitely meant to get the laces through it. He definitely meant to have a shot on target. I don't know if anyone's going to be as bold to say that he meant to get the slice in the top corner that he got, but it typified the battling qualities that I think that Gogic has, because from the opening header that he was, or sorry, the opening ball that he went up to challenge for the header for, he's running parallel to the strikers the entire time, and he's almost kind of like begging Christian Deutsch to sort of lay it off to him. And, you know, credit to Deutsch as well, because I think that's maybe something that's gone unnoticed and perhaps underappreciated. While he's having a little bit of a dry spell, you know, in terms of scoring goals, because I think that's the second one now that I can think of in recent weeks where he's laid it off to someone else who's applied the finishing touch. But it's everything else aside, it's an absolute wonder strike. And, you know, the wee celebration that he had afterwards with the ball up his jersey, like, you know, when he shows his, I think it's a wee girl that he's having, when he shows his daughter that in years to come, like, she's going to be over the moon with that.
You would think, yeah. Trying to win a football job. That's fucking silly.
Imagine your old man goes to all that effort, like, he scores an absolute worldie, and then your daughter in years to come goes, I don't like that. I'm not like something else.
It's all right. I wouldn't say it was amazing, but it's, well, thanks very much. No, I'm sure she will appreciate it. It's funny because when we were watching it, my wife Jane, she says, "Oh, he must be expecting a baby or something." I was like, "I don't fucking care," but then enough. She was right. Yes. We brought on Chris Cadden. What did you make of his performance? He came on for his debut.
It was a wee bit of a cameo appearance, wasn't it? There wasn't really much to say about it. Like, he didn't do anything wrong. I don't know. I think I'd said before that I don't know much about him from his time at Motherwell. I certainly haven't been watching any. I think was it Columbus Crew that he played for?
Yeah.
But we've got him in the door, and like every other player that plays for Hibs, I hope he does well. And if it provides us a wee bit more squad depth, which has become a little bit more of a pressing issue of late, then great.
We'll talk a wee bit about squad depth in a wee minute, but I agree with you. I think he did fine. You know, there was nothing stand out, but he definitely didn't do anything wrong. But what I thought was good was we were able to take Boyle off, obviously ahead of the semi-final, because Boyle takes a bit of punishment in games. So it's good to know how have to force him into playing the full 90 when you've got a big game coming up.
Yep.
And he's a good option to come on. If you need to take Boyle off, you're not really dropping the standard that much by making a substitution like that.
Aye. Like, I was reading earlier that Martin Boyle is, as of today, he is the most fouled player in the Premiership. So, aye, like, I wonder if that ties into his perceived lack of output this season.
Maybe.
Like, we talked about it before, but I wonder if it's just the case that he's not had the opportunity to try and, you know, get by someone because they're just taken up with the ground, because he is such a dangerous player, because he has been such a dangerous player that players are just, or the opposition are just cleaning him out before they ever gets any opportunity to do any damage. And I think the irony is perhaps that Hibs' second goal, did that come from a Martin Boyle?
Did, yeah, power to come out, yeah. Power had a good game, when you think about it. Our own goal and then the foul for the second goal.
Influential in both our goals, eh?
What's his first name?
I want to say it's Gary.
Ah, not Max then.
Max.
Which would have been better. That was Homer Simpson picked that. Yeah, Homer changes his name to Max Power in one episode. But I think there is an actual footballer called Max Power somewhere.
I'm sure someone will tweet us and let us know.
I can imagine going your life called Max Power.
Well, there's a boy on there. It's the fourth one who's called Max Thiel.
He's an English footballer that plays for Sunderland.
Max Power.
Would you rather be called Max Power or Peter Head?
Max Power, I think.
Aye,
I've got no justification for that other than I had that Peter Reid. Oh, is it Peter Reid for Peter Head? Volvo for sale.
The other player I wanted to talk about was young Dougie Tripod Doig. What a game he had, like, marauding up and down that left hand side. What did you think of his performance?
Probably his best game for Hibs so far. Like, it was properly, like, it was an accomplished performance, I think. So the game against Celtic, when he went off at half-time, I don't know, this is a weird tangent to go off on to go back again, but I think his defensive qualities against Celtic shone through.
Yeah.
And in fact, you can call it defensive. Like, so against Celtic, you had the boy Frimpong that was going up against him, and not for the first time this season, Hibs completely nullified that threat of Frimpong down the left-hand side. And obviously, Tripod's going off at half time, and as it turns out, it was like a tight calf or a tight hamstring or whatever. So he started the game on Saturday there, and he's just kind of, it was almost as if he'd never stopped playing. He just carried on that performance defensively. But perhaps the most encouraging thing from a Hibs point of view is his ability going forward. So he's been instrumental in the first goal. Like you were saying before about, you know, Murphy holding up the ball and then Dougie Tripod's made the overlap and running, and he's whipped that ball in. And you could argue that it was a bit of a nothing ball and it wasn't a great cross or whatever, but like, it wasn't a great cross in terms of it wasn't onto anyone's head and it wasn't to anyone's feet, but it has put it into that danger area. He's hit it low and he's hit it hard and he's forced Power to make a decision, and then, you know, it's worked in Tripod's favour.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing that probably exemplified his performance was when he got brought down by two of Kilmarnock's players, which incredibly didn't result in a penalty.
That was I was screaming for that one, and there was a few, like, obviously reading about it, the commentators kind of dismissed it quite quickly. It was like, ah, it's a bit soft. I couldn't work out why it wasn't a foul. Like anybody else on the pitch, that's a free kick. They've not taken the ball. They've wiped him out. How's it no a penalty? I couldn't get my head around why people were saying it wasn't a penalty. He's particularly through the view from behind the players, you can see the contact on his legs. And it's not like a wee, like a deft touch that you sometimes kind of have to really go, you know, super slow mo to find out if if knees have brushed together or whatever. You get taken out. Like, how can that not be a penalty? Or why is that not a penalty? I couldn't get my head around why folk weren't going absolutely fucking tonto about it being a penalty.
If Doogie Tripod is, like, he plays that ball and he plays it miles in front of him and he goes through those two players and he gets brought down, then I would perhaps argue, aye, it would be soft because, you know, there was no chance of him getting the ball. He's just kind of chancing his luck. If he was going down before contact was made, and we've seen that type of instance before, I would say, aye, it would be soft and probably even go as far as say definitely not a penalty. The way I saw it was two Kilmarnock players have basically formed a wall and shut him down, but Doogie Tripod has continued. He's tried to hurdle their legs. Like, he's tried to go, like, he's tried to get the ball that's not too far in front of him. And as well as the legs, one of the Kilmarnock players, I'm sure, puts an arm up in front of him. So there's absolutely no danger. Like, they've impeded him in the box. And to me, that was just a stonewaller.
Aye. Madness, eh? Madness. We saw the game out then, so 2-0. I thought Hibs were quite professional after that and just saw it. We had a couple of chances on the break, like Mallon broke forward towards the end. And the best thing about that move, because obviously Mallon kind of hit the ball right at the keeper, but he didn't find the corner, the keeper saved it. But Tam McManus made this wee noise in the commentary. He went, ah, like, like if you were just stepping into a particularly hot bath.
It was magic. Now that you describe it like that, I wonder if it's the same incident that we were talking about before we started recording. That noise was like, it sounded like he'd forgotten where he was. Like, if you were watching that at home on your own, you would go, oh, God, that could have been three.
But it was funny. What's the funny noise he's watching the football?
Oh, aye. Probably even at the football, but normally it's like drowned out by, you know, 14, 15,000 other people.
Aye. If I bought this funny things to people, but that made me laugh. I was chuckling about it for ages. In fact, I think I tweeted about it at the time. Just say, like, if you could capture the exact minute that he's stepping into the bath, I'm sure if you played it back, you could hear it again.
Can you watch it back on Hibs Pass? Because I'm pretty sure we could fast forward and find the exact moment.
I might do that. I'm going to say I might do it. I'm not going to do it. That's a lot of effort. somebody might do it who has time to do these kind of things.
Watch maximum of about 8 minutes of football. I'd say for about the 85th minute. In fact, if you wanted to be really, really precise about it, you'd do it from the minute that Stevie Mallon came on, and it's not a hell of a lot of football.
We could just start at the end of the game and work back, because it was right at the death, wasn't it? Like, it would have been nice and on the cake. I'm sure it was injury time.
Aye. I don't know, but that sounds about right.
And what's the, to watch it again, just to hear it again or to record it to then tweet it? Is that what you're...
Both? I'd love to hear it again and see it in the context, because I've completely forgotten what happened. But to be able to tweet it as well would be quite funny.
Well, what I think we should do, John, just at various points throughout the podcast, and not just this one, but, you know, for all future ones, just every now and again, somebody just go like that. Just as a service, a wee reminder.
I wonder if he was maybe reliving a past opportunity in front, you know, when he's bearing down on goal and he's maybe got a defender left and right of him, but just the keeper he beat. And it was so close, but so far.
He'd maybe been holding on a wee pent up fart and just kind of, you know how you can let it go and it's been quiet, so it's not been picked up by the mic, but the relief has been.
Do you think he was masking the sound of a fart in the studio?
That's potentially the case. It's no for me to say, John, but I would put money on it. Right, one of the things we normally do there after the game is we ask the listeners to send us in talking points from the game. So we're just going to take you through some of them, John. You can tell us what you think, and then we'll have a wee look at the upcoming semi-final once we've done this. So first point came from Christopher Black. He said, with Allen and McGuinness, the due back, surely we're in for a good second half of the season.
Possibly, aye. I mean, again, like referring to what I'd mentioned earlier about squad depth, to have, because I think McGuinness is a, as much as we haven't seen much of him, I think that he's more of an attacking midfielder, and we know what Scott Allen's capable of. So to have them at your disposal, to have that flexibility and that variation in lineups or, you know, substitutes to choose from, can only be a good thing. So aye, possibly. Do you know, I've had a canny best and I've had a wee whiskey tonight, so I'm going to go as far to say that having them available could be like the second half of Lennon's maiden SPL Premiership campaign in charge of Hibs. We could finish second.
Have another can. I think it's definitely promising. I think when you look at the, it gives us the strength and depth. So just now, we saw it at Celtic. When we played there, we were missing a few players, and so when it comes to bringing on a sub, you bring in Stephen McGinn came on. Stephen McGinn didn't have a bad game per se, but he's probably been signed as cover, as like, you know, if none of the other players are available, you would play Stephen McGinn. No, I would be unkind to him, but he's
cover,
he's, you know,
the cover.
He's a good player, but he is by definition backup to the first team. I think he's ever. Out of all the other midfielders, he's not getting picked ahead of them.
Yeah,
I think that's fair, and I don't think I've been unkind in saying that. If you can swap Stephen McGinn for Scott Allen or Kyle McGuinness or Jackson Irvine,
almost
me. I had that down as well, and I was like, I said it before I looked at my notes. Jackson Irvine or Chris Carden or Martin Boyle, Melke Hallberg, Joe Newell, Alex Gogic, they're all players that you could, you know, that could start a game and not really have a massive impact on the overall quality of the team.
Yeah.
So it's a good position to be. I mean, Scott Allen, I think, lifts the quality of the team, definitely, anyway. Next point then comes from Stephen, at Stephen_Edward. He said, best bit, the ref getting the ball kicked in his face. You don't see that enough in games, do you? But it did. He did get the ball right in the coupon.
Was that towards the end of the game as well?
Yeah, I think it was a Kelly shot that hit him.
That's right, aye. And it was Willie Collum as well, and I'm sure we were having a good dig at him a few weeks ago for something. So aye, he was probably drew a ball in the face.
There are very few things in life better than a referee getting sconed with a ball. Eh? It's good when a linesman gets wiped out by a slide tackle. That's like one of the best things. But a referee getting scalped is right up there.
Was there not quite I wouldn't say famous, but there was a video of a linesman getting absolutely blutered in the face with a ball that went viral maybe within the last 2 years? Like, properly clear. Was it in Scotland? Was, I want to say it was maybe at McDermott Park, but I could be making that up. But he got properly, like, just wiped out with the ball, straight in the coupon, on the touchline, doing with the corner flag, out. I'll see if I can find it.
It was probably what's his face? Ick Page, or whatever his name is, Uche, shot that's taken him out. Ricky says, Gogic, man of the match, cracking display by him. Would you have had picked Gogic as your man of the match?
I was having a conversation with this about this when I was away to play golf on Sunday about man of the match and how early it's awarded by Hibs. So I think it was maybe awarded in maybe the 80th minute, and it was given to Paul McGinn. And Paul McGinn put in a, you know, really good performance, really solid at right back, really attacking, you know, just, you know, ticking all the boxes there. But there's so many things that can happen in those remaining 10 minutes that can influence a man of the match. I don't know, like, taking Gogic's goal out of the equation, I don't think he had any better or worse a game than I've seen from Alex Gogic general.
I thought he was really good on Saturday. I thought he was best he's played in a while.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I suppose what I'm trying to say is when his performances are seemingly dropped, I didn't necessarily see it because he is that spoiler in midfield. Like, I think that he's I think he closes the opposition down quickly. I think he's hard on the challenge. I think he wins the ball back, and generally speaking, he doesn't fuck about with it. He gives it off to someone who can drive the ball forward again.
Yeah.
And I saw that same performance from him at the weekend, and obviously he topped it off with that goal. And you know, it's possible, and maybe I just didn't see it that way, that he was just better than normal.
I like that he has his socks rolled down. You know, there's a certain style of footballer that can play with their socks rolled down. I like it as that. It just looks hard, doesn't it? Like he looks like a hard player anyway.
Well, it's funny. So some of the I looked at that, and I've looked at it before, and I thought to myself that it's the kind of players who are, generally speaking, like the sort of flair players.
Aye.
Who wear, so I'm thinking, I'm going to say Jack Grealish down in England. Like he's quite well known for his massive calves, and for you know for playing with the socks rolled down, and he's quite a flair player.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back. Like I want to say David Ginola. He used to play like that. I think. He was about a flair player.
He's a good player, Ginola.
Gogic might be
similar style, isn't he? Similar.
Well, I was going to say, like, he might be setting the trend for the hard bastard.
Aye.
with the rolled down socks. Like,
he does the hard stuff with flair.
I didn't need the big shin pads. I just need the wee shin pads and the socks rolled down because I'm just going to run through you.
Aye. Right, I was quite happy with Gogic getting man of the match. If he'd been picked, McGinn though, he was terrific as well. And McGinn, now who mentioned it? It might have been Kenny Miller on Twitter had kind of referred to McGinn as maybe Hibs' best pound for pound signing in recent years. And you'd be hard pushed. I think I'm sure we picked him up for nothing, and he's made the right back position his own. And he puts in solid performances every week. Very, very rarely lets us down. I think he's probably been the surprise package signing because I think everybody saw him sign him and were underwhelmed. Do you know, at the time it was like, oh, fucking hell, right? We've had John McGinn, and we just, particularly when you then go on and sign Stephen McGinn, it's like, is this just like a sentimental signing or whatever? But he's been far from it. He's genuinely there on merit. You know, he's well worth his starting position.
Aye. So the way that you said underwhelmed was underwhelming in itself. do you know, it's probably that thing that I would say Hibs fans, like, maybe, I don't know, I'd imagine that there's a reasonable sized chunk of the Hibs support know the name, but maybe hadn't seen much of him play. And I would count myself among that group.
Yeah.
Because as I've said many, many times, I just didn't pay attention to fucking anyone outside East of the Road. When Hibs signed him, I must admit, like, I thought it was maybe a Jack Ross had managed him before. He knew exactly what he could get out of him.
Yeah.
It was kind of not like not an old pals act, but I can get the best out of this player, or I know what I need in this position, and this guy I know can do that job.
Yeah.
That being said, Paul McGinn's performances this season have been outstanding. Like Kenny Miller's probably right in saying that he's the best pound for pound signing. You'd maybe even go as far to say is that Paul McGinn's the benchmark for all Hibs signings in the future. Like in terms of his contribution, his application, desire, you know, you could attach any number of adjectives to it. He's been outstanding at right back. But he's that kind of player that might be down to just like the name, the fact that he's Scottish, you know, he's not an exotic, you know, foreign signing, or he's not a guy that you've never heard of or whatever. He's just Paul McGinn. But what Paul McGinn offers to Hibs is that solid defensive ability. But I think the thing that perhaps is, I don't know, overlooked, underappreciated, I'm not entirely sure, is how well he supports Hibs' attack.
Aye.
Like, well, I know even, it. Sorry, go on.
I was even right at the opening minutes of the game against Kilmarnock, he's dribbling past the player on the edge of the box and firing a shot in, which he's unlucky with. You know, the keeper's made a good save, fairly routine when you expect him to make it, but still has to make it. and he's got a couple of goals under his belt already. Do you think it's sort of like there's something happens to the McGinn genes? You know, like when Superman was on Earth and Earth's yellow sun gave him superpowers. Do you think there's something in the air at Trent when they do the training there?
If not that, then it must be like playing in the shadow structure. Playing in the shadow of Arthur's seat, something like that. I don't know.
Super Paul McGinn. Okay, right, next point. SDG said Gogic back to what he was what he does best, notwithstanding his thunder strike. Yeah. Doig needs encouragement to make more marauding runs, potentially such an attribute for us. And Colm, so fussy in awarding every slight contact as a foul. Funny he wasn't as fussy at Ibrox on Boxing Day. I think I called out Colm and the game when we were watching it, just how much he was enjoying blowing his fucking whistle to give free kicks.
Aye, so we were. I'd mentioned that before, and I'm maybe being harsh in saying that he deserved the ball in the pass, but I think you have to have a very specific or very particular type of personality to be a referee or to put yourself in that position of authority. And he fits the bill.
Aye, 100%.
I'm trying. Do you know, now that you say it, like, I'm trying to remember specific instances. Like, I remember seeing his face on the day and thinking, like, you're a dick. Like, I've got this theory as well that referees whose names that you don't know are generally speaking the better referees, yeah, are the ones that haven't fucked you over. I recognise and I know Willie Colm's name because he's fucked Hibs over.
Lots.
Aye. So, aye. I mean, at the end of the day, like, we got the result out of it. I don't think that he dished out that many bookings, which is probably, I don't know whether that's testament to his performance or a critique of his performance.
Can't even remember who he booked.
But it was pretty late on in the game, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Booking was really quite late on in the game. Was it for the challenge on Boyle?
Probably. Power again.
Aye.
And back to SDG's point about Doig, I would totally agree. I think we discussed Doig earlier on, so we won't dwell on that point anymore. But definitely, well, I think going forward, he's a...
If I could expand on it a wee bit.
Yeah.
I wonder... So, I'll maybe get the piss ripped out of me for this, but I was having a chat when I was on the way to the golf on Sunday, and I was saying that, like, I think Hibs are in a really good position in terms of the number of fullbacks that they have that are all vying for that left-back spot, if you like. And you get something different from each of them. And it made me think about, this is a bit that people might take the piss out of me for, Gareth Bale when he was at Spurs. Because yeah. I think at one point when he was at Spurs, they were talking about emptying him to Nottingham Forest. And then I think they just pushed him out to left midfield. And then they just basically kept pushing him further and further up the pitch. And then said, basically, fucking run with it and do whatever you want. I don't think that Doogie Tripod needs more license to get forward. Because I think when he does get forward, he does really, really well. It might just be a case of pushing him further up the pitch, but then he's got Jamie Murphy in front of him who played really well there. So, just enjoy him getting him, enjoy having him get forward when he does, because he's not that player that can't defend. Like, he's just kind of shirking all his defensive duties so he can get forward. He's getting forward when he can. Yeah, he's very fucking good at it.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes from left back, because I think there's definitely been talk of him moving into the centre, central defence. But I think you're right. I think there's potential to push him further up the pitch as well. So we'll see what happens. But definitely a promising career ahead of him. Neil Renton said, "What is the best Hibs starting 11 just now? Fully fit, no injuries or international call ups. Starting 11." So, I found this. I probably still couldn't answer. We'll give it a bash, but what about you, John? Because I gave you early sight of this one so you could think about it.
So, mine's is based on... I've tried to remove emotion out of it as much as possible. Try to throw in recent performances, try to think of the most attack-minded Hibs lineup possible. Marciano, number one, keeper. Paul McGinn right back, Porteous, Hanlon, Doogie Tripod, Jamie Murphy, left midfield, Joe Newell, Alex Gogic, Martin Boyle, Kevin Nisbet, Christian Deutsch. That would be my ideal starting 11.
Aye, that's a good one. Right, I will go 3-5-2. Right, Marciano and goals. Back three, Hanlon, Porto and McGinn. Gogic is a holding midfielder. Murphy on the left, Boyle on the right. And then in the centre, Allen and McGinnis. Fully fit.
No Joe Newell?
No.
Fuck off!
Right. When they're fully fit, right, I think McGinnis scored it. I've been saying this for ages. I see when we signed him, I was so excited because he's a player that I've watched for a while. Very few players that I know about in other teams. McGinnis was one that I think he just had a look at. Do you know when you see players that are just fucking good at football? You know, they could probably play in a couple of different positions. They're just good at it. Right? I don't know all like professional footballers are all good at football, but some just have that wee bit. But like, I know that making a direct comparison between McGinnis and we're going to say Wayne Rooney, right? But you know, Wayne Rooney was just like somebody who was and didn't have to think about it. Just can't fucking how to hit a ball, where to be, like when to dribble, when to pass, when to shoot. McGinnis had that sort of no anywhere near the level of Wayne fucking Rooney, right? Obviously, but that like Paul Scholes is another one. Scholes was just good at football. He wasn't amazing at any one particular thing necessarily, but was just a really, really good player. McGinnis, I think, is going to be that. Newell, I think, when he's on his game, is great. If he was, you could guarantee that every week, probably would put him in. But can he?
It's funny because we've seen so little of Kyle McGinnis, and we've seen so much of Joe Newell this year. And you've seen so much of what Joe Newell offers and so little of what Kyle McGinnis offers that you've went with Kyle McGinnis and your ideal starting 11.
Yep. And up front, Deutsch and Dennis, but
you're a complex creature, Matty.
Aye. But also there's a balance there as well, because McGinnis could get stuck in. Allen's not going to do any of the dirty work, is he? Like, we all know that. He is capable of smashing a player, as we saw against Rangers, which is one of my all-time favourite fucking football moments. but he's generally, isn't he? He's your creative player. But I think there you've got a bit of power. You've got... power and running and McGinnis, but also being able to get forward and support the attack. You've got the creativity in Allen. You've got your hard man defensive midfielder in Gogic. Two wingers, which I fucking love wingers, and then your front pairing, which is your big man and your wee man as well. It's got that for me is almost the perfect team.
I would love to see. I don't know how we could ever do this, but I think it's at Rocky Five where they have. They have like a computer-generated fight between two fighters. I think it's like Rocky Marciano in his prime against someone else in his prime. I would love it if someone could put my team against your team on a computer and see who comes out the victor.
Get your Xbox on. We'll get.
Have you got FIFA? Get it downloaded and we'll see what we can do.
We could do that. You can pick the team. We can see how we get on. The only caveat is I'm shite at FIFA. I need to get Josh to play.
Well, listen. I don't know. I think this is ideal because. I don't play FIFA either. So you and I could get involved for the like a maiden almost of our FIFA cherry popping game. And we'll both put up my team against your team. We'll see how we go on.
We'll need to stream it.
We'll put it on Twitch. Like Longbangers at twitch.tv.
Right. We'll make that happen at some point. Brian plays FIFA, I'm sure. Or he used to. Anyway, right, we digress. That's two good starting 11s there, anyway. I think somebody made the point as well, but is there such a thing as a starting 11 these days? You know, like a favourite starting 11 because you have squad rotation, but you also have the different teams that you come against that maybe that 11 isn't the best suited for that particular game.
Yeah, I think when I don't know about Stubbs, I honestly couldn't lay my heart on it, but it was certainly when Lennon was in charge, like he tweaked the team from time to time. And I didn't think then that there was such a thing as a starting 11. I do think it is kind of like horses for courses kind of thing.
Aye. Well, I think Lennon, the second half of the really good season, pretty much started until we went to Tiny. And he inexplicably changed it for Tyne Castle when we were pushing. You know, if we'd won, we would have got second.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we almost would have guaranteed second. And he changed the team for that game without it being necessary. Do you know, it was for tactics or trying, I don't know, you know, whatever his thinking was behind it, he changed it. I think if Lennon had went with his tried and tested and trusted 11 that he'd been playing with week in, week out, we would have won that game.
Yeah, small tweaks rather than sort of major shuffles in formation or whatever. I mean, I think someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we're rotating maybe between like one or two formations at the moment, just making like slight tweaks here and there.
Yeah.
And changing that mid-game. So I think at the weekend there, maybe one of the changes that benefited us was taking Irvin off and bringing Doidge on. That changed Hibs shape.
Yeah.
Which benefited us.
I think there's the better teams, they're probably the best teams, tend to have a fairly stable starting 11 and only really change it for if they've got a high density of matches together and they want to keep everybody fresh or injury or suspension. But other than that, you kind of would be able to plot and say that's their left back, that's their centre halves.
Yeah. You mentioned that before in terms of resources available to people that they,
yeah,
you know, those clubs, they can have two number ones and, yeah, you know, across a number of different areas of the pitch, if not every area of the pitch.
Well, I think it was one of the hallmarks of the good start to the season we had was that we had used the fewest number of players.
Yeah.
You know, we got off to a great start. And I think Jack Ross had mentioned how few players had played in comparison with all the rest of the SPL teams or top
and then
eight teams.
That caught up with us at Christmas because we found ourselves, like, aye, I think seven out of the, I think it was one of the guys on Hibs.net had pointed out this, I think it was seven out of the top 12 players, you know, who'd played the most up until that point, seven of them were Hibs players.
Aye, that's a good point. That was a good post on Hibs.net as well. I'm sure Tam McManus tweeted that one as well. Know that I've got a thing about Tam McManus. I've mentioned him a few times tonight.
Do you wonder what kind of noise he made when he read it?
Right, William Graham says, how good can Doig become? Personally, I think he's a bit special. Yep. Matt Reedy said, was working, so didn't see the game. So, how sexy is Hallberg?
I think I mentioned that earlier. I thought he just slotted into that sexy Joe New role perfectly.
Aye. McGlashan, which is one of my favourite Twitter handles, McGlashan from Absolutely, wasn't it? That was the show that he featured on.
I don't know. Who?
So there was a show called Absolutely. McGlashan was on it, who was totally anti-English, like in the stereotypically Scottish. I'm sure there's like a sketch where he sort of cycles down to the border just to lift his kilt up and moon at England and then gets his bike in and cycles.
Hang on, I need to write all these things then that I'm going to have to YouTube and tweet
it. I'm sure McGlashan is he's reading the news one time and the Hibs result comes to Hibs beating Hearts and he's like, fucking mute. McGlashan says, great result on a pitch that's not conducive to playing good football. Kelly wanted a physical contest and we not only stood up to them but overpowered them. How often have we rolled over in games like that before? Porteous, McGinn and Gogic had fine games. That's a really, really good point as well about the physical battle. I'm glad you mentioned Porteous because we've overlooked Porteous. We've been talking about the game, but I thought Porteous was outstanding.
Yeah, just to throw another stat out there, he's in the top 10 of players with the most interceptions this year. Up until the 19th of January, presumably from the start of the season. This all comes for Pye and Bovril, incidentally. They tweeted it earlier. So I know, like, Hibs back four had a cracking game in multiple aspects. Like, the, you know, thinking about the defensive, you probably think of like defensive qualities and the two centre halves and Paul Hanlon and Ryan Porteous, who've had their critics recently.
Yeah.
Both had outstanding games. McGinn at right back that we talked about already. Dougie Tripod as well. He's definitely got all. Do you know the one thing that he's got in addition to his defensive abilities and his attacking abilities is his age. Like, there's so much time for him to to just learn and progress and add things. And I'd hope that he progresses in the same way that Ryan Purchase has done. Like, there's going to be wee bumps and wee hiccups, and, you know, there might be a mistake or two along the way, but I hope that he learns from them the same way that Ryan Purchase has. And, you know, in some of the sort of setbacks that he's had, whether it's through injuries or, you know, giving away stupid fouls or whatever. Reasons to be optimistic with having Dougie Tripod at left back.
And I thought, considering how abject the performances against Livingston and Ross County were, where they did bully us, I suppose, being able to stand up to a powerful team like Kilmarnock, and Kilmarnock are a strong team who were coming to East Road to try and impose that strength on us. And I would agree with McGlashan and say that we more than stood up to it.
I was thinking about the boy, Di Camona. So I think he got a bad injury against us the last time he was at Easter Road. I don't know whether that was this season or last year. Apologies, because like this whole lockdown period, the days all merge into one.
Nobody cares, John. It's all right.
But Hibs struggled against Hearts when Di Camona was on the side. And actually, like, he looked like a properly good football playing centre half, if you like, and we never had that problem at the weekend. That might be because of that, you know, the way that we set up to begin with, where it was more like a sort of 4-5-1. But I like that physical battle, like winning that physical battle. It might just be down to having had that wee bit of a break after the Christmas period. You know, we had that, you know, sort of extended break, if you like, because of the Celtic fiasco. Yeah. You know, with the game getting pushed back. But we mentioned before there about like the number of minutes the Hibs players had. Well, it was a good thing at the start of the season that we had that stability. It started to catch up with us over the Christmas period, where we just couldn't keep up with Ross County and Livy, who really got in our faces. So I know it was good to see Hibs, like the boy says, like McGlashan says, just winning that physical battle.
Captain Mumu said Hibs' next signing should be a set of those lights for the pitch. definitely. Ryan Taylor said Alex Gorgic, lifetime contract, pay the man whatever he wants. Yep. Not sure for lifetime.
I read that and I did laugh, but I thought it was maybe a little bit like those.
Tongue in cheek, innit?
Aye.
A lot of love for Gorgic. So Kyle McLaren says, is he finally settled down and is getting better each week? Yes, I would say so. Long may it continue. Pride of Edinburgh said, what team do you reckon Hibs will field in the semis? Same as Kelly or a different lineup? Do you know, we'll come back to that because we're going to talk about the semis in just a wee moment. So I'll just remember to mention that again. I'm on camera, I'm taking notes. You can't, I don't know if you can see, John, if you're just wondering what I'm doing here. Right, team for semi. I'll write that down and probably forget that I've written it. Ron Burgundy, are Hibs too negative in formation, or did Kelly just come to frustrate and nick it?
Nah, I think that maybe ties in with what we were saying before about, you know, starting 11s and that kind of thing. Like, whatever it was that Hibs did at the weekend, it worked. You know, we started off with a 4-5-1, won the physical battle, as we mentioned. We already had a goal at that point, which was maybe a wee bit of bonus. Like, it was sort of fortuitous in the way that it came about. But you kind of, you know, I don't know if there's any arguments or complaints about the second goal. That came following a change that Hibs had made.
Yeah.
Maybe on a different day and different circumstances, you'd be saying that it was a tactical masterclass for Jack Ross, but he's maybe no quite earned that accolade yet.
I know. Jack Ross's record is fantastic, Hibs, by the way. This is one of life's great mysteries, is why there's, maybe there's not, maybe it's like, you know, the echo chamber of social media and that, but you see similar posts and you think, how there's still quite like a air of negativity towards Jack Ross. I just can't understand it. I think we're doing great, but third in the league, a cup semi final. We won the Scottish Cup semi final, and had we lost to any other team, say if it'd been Celtic that put us out, we would all went, we've done well to get to the semi-final because of who it was. There's no doubt it does change the way that you view it. It becomes, it's no successful thing to get to the semi-final if you lose to Hearts. Anybody else, you probably go, right, that's about the level we should be aiming for consistently to get to semi-finals and finals. So he's doing what is asked of him in terms of results. But
it's funny, it wasn't that long ago that you know, when we were, like, I think you mentioned it last week or the week before about the number of semi-finals and finals that we got to. I think you said that growing up, like, it just wasn't there.
Aye, just didn't.
And then your Josh, you were saying, like, it's become quite commonplace for him. But it is a wee bit of a marker. Like, it almost feels like we are sort of like in, you know, there or thereabouts, definitely in the latter stages of the competition. And you think, you know, maybe there's an opportunity, maybe things go our way, you know, we come away with a bit of silverware or whatever. I do think that Jack Ross is doing well. And I think perhaps because of that sort of weird, sort of time warpy period that we're living in, perhaps people forget that this is his first full season. He's still making his mark on the team. And we're in, I think I said it before, that we're in a much, much, much better position than what he inherited.
Yeah. I suppose the other thing you think about is when they're having to train and do everything under COVID conditions as well. So it's not even like you've got normal circumstances of being able to, you know, mix players up and get everybody involved and have all the, maybe the team building things that you would do normally and all the rest of it. If you're under all these restrictions, you can't be fucking off to Dubai, for example, for a training camp. But like all these kind of things that
the training normal camp.
Training camp. The air quotes. By the way, what was that all about? That was Lennon channeling his inner Kevin Keegan, except the difference was Kevin Keegan still had a hope of winning the fucking league when he had his meltdown.
I think, so I'd mentioned that, I don't know when it was sometime during this podcast when I talked about like the inner monologue. So there's, I expect there's something that Neil Lennon wanted to say, and then he was at odds with the inner monologue, and the inner monologue won. And that's what you saw in that. And I think, see, within the first however many words it was, let's say it was a dozen words, he said, I think it was out of the entire squad, only 13, you're sorry, everyone tested negative apart from two, which is remarkable.
It's remarkable. Only well, two folk got COVID.
It's remarkable. Why did you go to Dubai?
Aye, it was just a mental interview. I was listening to somebody on the catching up on the Sports Sound podcast when I was in the car earlier on, and I was gobsmacked at some of the stuff that he was coming out. Well, I would say though, when he called out the hypocrisy and said everybody was cheering when the Scotland players were doing the fucking conga in the dressing room or at the meal after they qualified, you have to sort of acknowledge that's a fair point. There is a wee element of double standards that everybody was going on.
I don't know. I think you have to look
at thing, getting pissed off at folk being on sun loungers having a pint.
Let's try and be impartial for a moment. So looking at the Scotland
I'll
stuff.
I'll try to be impartial.
So I'm looking at the Scotland stuff, and at the time that that happened, was that sort of late summer, early autumn? Had we just moved into sort of like tiers within Scotland and what have you. So all of those players still had their, if I'm right, all of those players still had their sort of elite sporting status. You know, they were in their bubbles and they were... I don't mean like the elite sporting status had changed, but the world had changed in terms of new variants of COVID that were doing around. So
yeah.
Celtic, when they were granted permission to go for their trip, Leanne Dempster was still in charge of Hibs. I think it had just been announced that she was leaving. And she said, she came out afterwards and said, we weren't consulted, we were just told the game was being moved and whatnot. Following that, in the months after that, the situation with COVID in the UK worsened. And the whole of Scotland was plunged into, you know, increased restrictions again, particularly in the period that Celtic were due to travel.
Yeah.
And they still decided to travel. Neil Lennon was talking about, you know, downtime. You know, they had a drink around the pool. I'm not party to the ins and outs of the restrictions and what have you. But I'm pretty sure that there was something that was tweeted. And I'm going to assume that it was about restrictions within Scotland. You know, bars aren't open here. You know, it didn't look like they were in their protective bubbles when they were sat around a pool, kind of, you know, sharing a pint and in each other's faces having a conversation. I think that's evidenced by the fact that two of them have picked up COVID while they were over there.
Aye, but at the same time, it's never been recommended that you do a conga line. You know, like it's always been kind of your social distancing has remained a necessary thing throughout lockdown.
True.
Like, you know, all the tears. So that's everything he said when he called that out. I was like, fair play on you for calling it out for a start. And I found it hard to disagree with. The rest of it was fucking nonsense, though. I mean, it was an astonishing rant. It just looked like his proper Kevin Keegan. You were just waiting on him saying, I would love it if we went there and nobody got COVID.
Wasn't he too far away from when he was in charge of Hibs, when he was talking about... Do you know, it kind
after
of...
After the derby we were talking about.
Yeah.
Second, we lost the plot then.
Kind of makes me think it's the beginning of the end, because, like, as Hibs fans, we've seen this behaviour. And, like, I know Neil Lennon's got his critics and what have you, but, you know, for how do I put this? How do I make this diplomatic? He gets a lot of shit because of who he is, because he doesn't stand from criticism. He's outspoken, really? and rightly so. But as manager, I think when things start to go wrong, and things have been going really wrong for Celtic this season, he starts projecting. He starts just lashing out at everything and everyone.
Aye. Right. Anyway, nothing Celtic. Fuck them. Right. Aldo said, thoughts on the new goalie? Can he or can or could he replace Rocky? Mind them both are only signed till the end of the season.
Do you know, I'm really curious about the goalkeeper situation. You know, we recalled Dubrovsky, we've signed Macy. Is Macy only on a short-term deal? Is that right?
Yeah, it's just at the end of the season.
Interesting. I don't know what to make of that. I really don't. I assumed, I think I said last week, that with Dubrovsky being recalled, that he would be our starting goalkeeper and Matt Macy would be there as backup. I think that Dubrovsky's probably earned that. But they put Matt Macy in. To be fair, like, I don't think he's really done much wrong.
No, he's been fine. He flapped that cross, one cross on Saturday, but conditions were crap and he caught the ball right after it, so no complaints there.
So I don't know if he'll replace Marciano, because I don't know that, like, I still think that Marciano will stay.
I hope so. Counter to your dream as well.
For the listeners, I had a dream last night that Marciano had signed for Celtic on a pre-contract.
Terrible. Alistair Taylor said, what's your thinking on the rumour of Lafferty signing for us? My answer is three words, fuck right off. There's no chance. Lafferty is not coming anywhere near him. This is like a daft rumour that somebody started and grew arms and legs. It's total bash.
We'd been trying to start, well, we talked about starting a long buyer's rumour of similar shithousery, and I think whoever it was that started it, fair play to them. It's brilliant, but no fucking chance.
Never going to happen. Ron Burgundy, Cadden on a long deal, but why only 6 months for Ozzie Irvine? My take on that is just a deal that suited both parties. I think Hibs are already making noises about extending it.
Extending Irvine's?
Yeah, Jackson's.
It's his surname, you dick.
What?
If they are, like, fair dues, I don't really, like, Hibs transfer dealings at times are strange and they're interesting and they're clever and they're astute. So, like, the Canberra deal, when it happened, like, the way that it worked out for Hibs, the, you know, for the fee that we got him for, phenomenal.
Yeah.
But Irvine, for 6 months, you kind of look at it and you wonder, like, you know, as much as we see that in black and white as the fans, like, you wonder what else is happening behind the scenes, what other sort of conversations have taken place, whether it's, like you say, it suits both parties to get him playing football, you know, a player of his quality and experience playing for Hibs for 6 months.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who really knows?
Aye. Gregor, right, John, you know Gregor, so how's your
surname? Gregor. Mizen.
I didn't want to get it wrong. I was going for Mitson and I was like, I don't think it's Mitson. So I thought, Mizen, Gregor Mizen, has Lennon finally lost the plot? So yeah, what's the square goal with the Scottish Government now? Just discussed that. 150k on Hanlon Hill said, what would you choose if you could take only one option with you to a desert island for a year? And there would be enough to last a full year. Would you pick one, biscuits, two crisps, maize or potato, three chocolate, or four, a gelatin-based sweet?
if you're going to a desert island for a year.
Aye. And you've got a year's supply, and I'm not going with the right, we're assuming these things.
I think again, like the really boring one is the your corn and potato, innit? Like, you need sustenance. You can't just survive on sugar for a year. As much as a year's worth of chocolate sounds really good.
It'd melt like fuck on a desert island. That's the issue I've got with chocolate there.
Well, they make chocolate in different climates is made to a different recipe to withstand the heat.
Is this actual factual?
To the best of my knowledge, it is. Aye, so we like your chocolate in America or Australia, for example, where it's got varied climate. It's made to a different recipe from like your dairy milk.
Why do they just do that here for when it's the summer then? Why do we have to put up with shitey, melty chocolate if they could just import the recipe from fucking somewhere hot?
E-numbers. I'm going to say E-numbers.
Aye. Fucking Brexit.
Brexit.
But crisps are quite dry for the hot climate as well. When you go on holiday, you do get the, the ones that are like Walker's crisps, but they're not called Walker's. What are they called?
Lay's.
Yes. You have them, so I'll probably say crisps.
Paprika crisps with vodka and Fanta lemon over ice. Not all in the one glass before you get smart about it, but vodka and Fanta lemon over ice on holiday is the best drink. It's not the Fanta lemon that you get here is not the same.
No, it's no. Right, semi-final coming up. John, what team are you picking? Would you change the team from the Kilmarnock win, or would you stick with that?
If I was going to change the team, I would maybe start with the team that finished the Kilmarnock game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or sorry, the change when we brought Doidge on for Irvin. I don't know that there was any other changes up until that point. I think the game, like, it's a cup game. Opportunity to get into the final, let's go win it. Let's go at them, let's win it. But I don't know, like, I'm not a football manager, I'm not Jack Ross. I'm sure he'll have his tactics and his lineup in mind. He'll maybe try to be a wee bit more clever with it in terms of who he picks and how he plays, but I would just say go for it.
Aye. I don't think we'll be far away from the team that started. I think he probably picked that team with the semi-final in mind, which is why he would have put 70 minutes into Jackson Irvin.
Right.
As well, just gets his fitness up a little bit. He's got some minutes into Chris Cadden. Boyle's got game time coming back from injury. Murphy's still kind of getting his way back to full fitness. He played 90 minutes on Saturday.
I think he did.
I can't remember if he came off.
He maybe came off in a double sub for, was it Malin and Cadden when they came on? It was Hallberg that came off. But there was a double sub. But anyway.
I think if we can start with Murphy and Boyle on either side, we've got a great chance. I think they're, as attacking outlets, and the other thing is it stops teams attacking us if you know you've got players of that quality on the flanks. It just nullifies, especially if you've got teams who like to push their fullbacks forward. I think that's why we get a bit of joy against Rangers when we play them, because you've got that threat that just nullifies that side.
If you've
nullifies
got two,
us as well, but
aye, if you've got Murphy and Boyle there, and we already talked about Diggy Tripod and Paul McGinn going forward, then aye, that's going to keep their fullbacks at bay.
Okay, and we asked for people's memories of semi-finals for the League Cup. So just kind of as I'm looking them up, John, what was semi-finals spring to mind? If you're going to kind of discuss a couple,
I think the one that springs to mind is the God. I don't know what year it would have been. Would it have been late 2006, early 2007 for the CIS Cup against St Johnstone at Tynecastle?
Yeah.
I was in the wheat field with at least one of my mates. I'm trying to think. We were talking before the podcast about these League Cup semi-final highlights, and you mentioned the game against St Johnstone. I've just got no memory of it, so apologies if my mates are listening and they're thinking to themselves, I was fucking there, and they can't remember me. Me and at least one of my mates was in the wheat field, but we were so far to the right-hand side of the wheat field that I think we were almost looking to our left towards the goal. It was almost as if we were outside of the pitch.
Yeah.
And that was obviously the end that Benji scored the winner into. Just remember that being a really, like, Hibs had started brightly. I think David Murphy scored, but then St Johnson really came back at us through, what do you say, Jason Scotland scored for them.
Probably, and then always fucking scored against us.
I remember memories of that. Kevin McCann, Lou Stevenson coming on half-time in that game. And then, the winner for Benji, whether it's been an accidental collision or whether he's deliberately knocked the St Johnston defender over, but then he's just taking a piss out of three, I want to say about three defenders, but maybe my memory's colouring this. And then I just sort of like put it past the keeper, put him the wrong way.
I always remember about that is the boy who's obviously, I'm sure it's the guy that he trips up, because there's no way it's accidental. Like, he's just cynical as anything, you know, he's just going, fuck it, I'm through here if I trip this boy up. But the guy's out raging about it after Benji scores, he just runs and shoves him, and Benji can lose him, like, mate, what the fuck, what's your problem? And then gives it big lights to the Hibs fans. And then we beat them on the way to the final in 2016 as well, where McGinn and Cummins scored in. And we couldn't remember if that was 2-0 or 2-1 that game. I think it was 2-1.
I just can't remember at all.
Well, Cummins scored the penalty, and then McGinn scored a long range. Sure, it was snowing in that game as well. Snow seems to feature quite a lot in our League Cup memories.
And you know, there's snow forecast in the next couple of days, if not the weekend. So fingers crossed.
So it's a lucky omen. And Raymond Brown says semi against Old Rangers. They spent all that money that they never had when they were financially doping their success. We'd remained in existence by the skin of our teeth. Then on to the final, and then my memory of three quarters full of Hybes Hamden. Obviously, 1991 Scottish Cup. I remember not being allowed to go to that game. But watching that, staying up to watch highlights, was at school the next day. But the highlights must have been on like STV or BBC late at night, and watching it. And obviously, I had that kind of classic strip as well, playing in the green. And I can picture now, even without seeing it, you can picture Mickey Weir picking the ball up and flying it in, and Keith Wright just rising and knocking it. I'm sure it's Gary Stevens coming to the other. Other defender for Rangers is on the line, but they both kind of cover the posts.
Aye, and Keith Wright just nods it between them.
Right in the middle, and maybe with a wee Keith Wright celebration. And
yep, I think that aside, the sort of the semi final memory. It's not even the semi final memory. It's the memory of the tournament. Subsequently, because I was too young, I was 9 year old at the time. But it was like you didn't go to the game or that. But Keith Wright having scored in every round of the competition, it's just something that's stuck with me for, well, the last 29 years, basically. Aye. It's something I always look out for, is that player that scores in every round of the competition, because it seems like it's quite a unique accolade.
He got a watch for it, I'm sure.
Did he?
Aye, I'm sure he got awarded a watch for scoring in every, whether it was for every round of or being the top scorer, and it just so happened that he'd scored in every round, obviously, by getting that far in the competition and winning it.
That rings a bell, actually, now.
Aye. That was the first time at Hamden, so I went to the Cup final. Obviously, the first time I'd seen Hibs win the Cup, or a Cup. And there was Hibs fans locked out. The first time I'd seen really the size of the Hibs support, or the potential of it. And just be like, fuck, this is amazing. I mean, what a day we saw. Again, that's another one that's very vivid. I don't remember too much about the game, but I can replay the goals from the viewpoint of where I was in Hamden, Old Hamden at that point as well. I more so Keith Wright's goal again than McIntyre's penalty, because you know he's played through and he's still quite a bit out. It's not like he's played through in the box. It's still, you know, a bit of distance and
a lot of time to think about it.
Just how, and those are the ones that strikers, even good strikers, miss those ones because they've got the time to think about it. They think, oh, am I going to go around the keeper? I'm going to hit it early or whatever. And he'd be so calm and just the way like he looks up and just side foots it into the corner, fucking, and then again away.
I can picture the grainy picture for the newspaper. Like, is I think it's maybe. Yeah. I don't know if it's the reverse angle, like for behind the goalkeeper, or if it's for behind him. But I can definitely picture that, like the sort of him opening his body up.
Aye.
To bend around the keeper.
The funny thing is,
you should tweet that out after this as well, when you're talking about League Cup memories.
We were talking earlier about size of squads, and that was definitely an era when, like, you know, if you see the team photo for the start of the season, you used to get them in the evening news and you can have them up on your wall in your room.
Yeah.
And the squad photo was all, it was like the first team and a couple of subs. That was it. That was pretty much the squad. There wasn't like a 25-man squad that they've got, or it didn't feel like there was a 25-man squad like you have now. It was like that was your team and they played more or less come hell or high water.
Aye. Well, I think, now that you mention it, when I was reading back recently, I forget whose book it was, but they were talking about Hibs' run to the Skull Cup. And it was talking about the number of players, like different injuries throughout the tournament. And I like it is like you were saying, like it probably wasn't that long before it that, you know, subs were increased from 2 to 3. And it wasn't that long before that it was, you know, subs were introduced at all.
I think maybe 2 subs at that game. I can't remember. But a great day. Hopefully we're back at the final. After this one, another thing just to show, I was just to reiterate the wee campaign that HSL are doing to Hibernian supporters. Mm-hmm. For folk who are, like most of us, would have been heading to Hampden this weekend. And the benefit to the club of getting to Hampden for semi-finals and finals is it's like a big financial boost for them because they get their share of the ticket revenue. And obviously, mm-hmm. with the fans there, Hibs are missing out on that. So Hibernian supporters are asking folk to donate the cost of their ticket to that campaign. That money goes straight to the club, and therefore ensuring that they do get their cut at what would have been a successful event for them. Aye. So I hope folk continue to get behind that. That's on until the end of the month. You can donate till. And funny, I saw today, and I can't remember the name of the retailer. So one of Hibs' sponsors that do menswear, and I read about this on Hibs.net first. I read the post that they were donating. So you can win a signed shirt, £50 for Victoria Group. I think there's another one in there that you can win from another sponsor. But these folk were given a 3-piece suit. But when I read it at first, I read it as a 3-piece suite. I was like, that's quite a big prize to give for it. And the person who linked it, I think it was Dan on Hibs.net, had said the full story is here and put a link to the Hibernian supporters website. I clicked on that and I'm reading it. My wife Jane, she's a proofreader, so when I'm reading it, I've got it in my head there's a 3-piece suite that you can win. I'm reading this is a three-piece suit, and I'm waiting to nudge Jane to say, "Fucking look, typo here," and then the penny dropped just before I fucking made a proper tell myself. I was like, I started chuckling and admitted what my mistake anyway. But it's a 3-piece suit you can win. So don't be expecting a fucking sofa. Right, you'll be disappointed. You'll be sitting everywhere down a pair of trousers, a waistcoat, and a jacket. But a good prize, and it's good to see folk getting behind it. And Evening News have shared it, and Hibs are backing it. So hopefully it's a success. Right, last point that I forgot to bring this up when we were talking about the talking points. This came from Hibs TV commentator Dave Armstrong. He said, "Hi, I was going over some stats and squad data this afternoon, and it seems we're overloaded in midfield and critically light in every other area except left back. So we've no strikers if Deutsch and Nisbet are unavailable. And centre back, only Big Daz for cover and maybe Gogic. Anything to be concerned about there, John?"
A wee bit, aye. I haven't been that concerned about it before, but I think injuries and... But I think it's primarily injuries. It's not injuries and suspensions. It's just injuries. It's kind of... It's really hurt us a bit recently.
Aye.
The only cover, I think, maybe that we've got it right back is David Gray. And I think we've acknowledged that his days as number one are probably over. I think if you get him at right back now... What's that? Number two, sorry. Sorry, I meant to start in choice right back. I think those days are numbered. So I don't think you're going to get the sort of the rampage and all action performance for David Gray that we're used to. The rest of the pitch, we've talked about competition for Porteous and Hanlon. I think there's still a good few years left in Hanlon, and there's plenty of years in front of Porteous, but Darren McGregor's not really the competition that you want there, and it's not the squad depth either.
Aye.
Hibs, I'm sure I've said before that Hibs have got a hard on for central midfielders, and I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if it's versatility or what. Jamie Gullen, as I see it, is the only the only sort of backup striker that we've got. Maybe Jamie Murphy could play up front, or maybe Martin Boyle could play up there.
Yeah,
you know, if one or the other was injured. Possibly, maybe that's why we're so overloaded with midfielders, that we've got a few attacking midfielders there that could deputise as a striker. I don't know the reason for that. Maybe Hibs are. I just don't know. I think we'd probably all like to see a couple more strikers there and a couple more defenders. And might just be that we're having to make do at the moment.
Aye. I think having an extra striker, you want competition for places. And having a natural striker who come in and put a bit of pressure on Nisbet and Doidge wouldn't be a bad thing. I think when you've got more midfielders coming in, like there's nobody in the midfield whose place is assured in the team. They all have to play well to keep their place now. You see a left-back with Stevenson and Doig being able to rotate, and I think the performances you see from both of them are improving week on week. I think neither of them are putting in bad performances, because you know if you want to keep the jersey, you have to be at the top of your game. Hanlon and Poaches didn't really have that trouble at the moment. I think if I was Jack Ross and looking at strength, my priority would definitely be one at the back and one up front to provide that bit of competition. You maybe didn't need somebody who is, I'm not sure how available they are, but better than what we've got at the moment. Ideally, you'd want to bring in better, but I don't think you just need somebody who's good enough to put pressure on them. You know, that would compete for the place. That's probably the way to put it.
A Humphrey Rudge type.
Let's not get carried away. Go ahead and drink, John. Right. Score prediction for Saturday, and we'll wrap up because that's we're in injury time here.
I'm going to say 2-0 Hibs.
2-0 Hibs.
Hibs.
Scorers?
Nisbet. And Murphy.
I think Nisbet will score. I think he's got a point to prove at Hampden. So I fancy Nisbet to score. I think Doidge will score as well. I'll go 3-0 Hibs. 3-1. I think we'll probably concede. Concede to fucking Wanderers. This is like St Johnstone, a funny team, because we didn't have a great record against them, right? And you look at their starting lineup, and you've got Liam Craig, you've got Kennedy, who was at Hibs. See, I think he's still there.
Oh, yeah.
But didn't really do anything when he was at us. Liam Craig, again, Craig wouldn't get back into the Hibs team now. It's mental how you've got players who didn't cut out of Hibs, and yet they find a level of performance against us that causes us problems. Danny Swanson, if he's still there, or if he signed for somebody completely different now.
Oh, Danny Swanson, where did he go? Did he go like
something like that? Maybe juniors or somewhere like that.
I think the one that gets me a wee bit is Wotherspoon. I liked Wotherspoon, and I still think he's a really good technical player. I don't know whether he's just, I think we've talked about it with Dre Wright, ironically, having come from St John's, like sometimes players just find the right fit. And I don't think that Wotherspoon wasn't the right fit at Hibs, but he was also playing for Hibs at a time where things were a bit shit.
Aye.
Like, I wonder if it would be a different set of circumstances now if he was to force his way into the team as a promising youngster.
Yeah, probably. Right, well, we'll leave it there, John. Back on Thursday for Short Bangers.
Yep. I'll be there.
Yeah. Get your questions in, folks. Just tweet us at Long Bangers, and we will go through them on Thursday evening. We'll probably do a Bangers episode as well because we're due one of them. Cool. Alright, thanks very much, John, for your time. We'll get Brian back for it as well. He's on his way to recovery now. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for your points, and we'll catch you next time.
Well, they trailed me down when I broke free. I drank all the whiskey in Tennessee.